Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Teacher and the Admin podcast. I'm Chris Felicello, here with my partner, Gary Armida. How you doing, Gary?
How you doing?
Good, and we have a very special guest today, Karen. And Karen, how do I pronounce your last name?
Jaffray.
Yes. Karen Jaffray is, we're so excited to have her here. She really created a new school called the Voyagers Community School that is something that I think we've all strived for, and it's been described to me as a progressive school where kids are driving their own learning. But we're going to give Karen a chance to talk about that a little bit. But Karen, do you want to start by telling us a little bit about your educational career and how you came to your vision of the?
Sure. We have a little bit of a lag in our conversation, so hopefully that won't be a problem. But let's go. So my, I always say that in my lifetime, I feel like I've always been a teacher, but I have not spent much of my career in traditional settings. So when I went to college, I actually studied political science and communications, and I thought I was going to go into the law. But I was very interested in teaching, and I'd always been a teacher. I'd been a dance teacher. I'd been a scout leader. I had taught at my college and in the community around my college, tutoring and so on and so forth. So teaching has come fairly naturally to me. When I graduated, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. So I went back home after college and had a job in Manhattan, took the train back and forth and spent about 6 months in.
Did you go to Peter Luger's?
I know about Peter Luger's, but I don't meet. So there you go.
Yeah, we saw last night a show on the Cooking Channel with Peter Luger's. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a beautiful place. It's a great spot.
Yeah.
I had what was foreseeably an incredible professional career. And 6 months in, I said, this is just not for me. The office, the grind, the train, you know, everything about it. And so I moved up to Harvard, Massachusetts, and was fortunate to get a teaching position in the public school there. And I taught fifth, sixth, and eighth grade social studies. I was not trained as a teacher. I wasn't certified as a teacher, but they were happy to have me to fill a maternity spot. And I taught this very active and engaged social studies class. And I think that, you know, my colleagues were either totally puzzled or totally angry because it was the noisiest classroom in the school.
Yeah.
But the kids came back every day energized and excited. And we had a fun year together. But unfortunately, with tax cuts and so on and so forth, I was out of job at the end of that. And so the rest of the balance of my career has been in, for a time, was in fitness and physical education. And I ran YMCAs, YWCAs, and all of their fitness programs and camp programs and so on and so forth. And in that role, I trained a considerable number of people. So again, you know, that teaching aspect within me emerged. And then I moved to Virginia and I worked for an association, the Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance Association. And I was put in charge of a concept, which was called Physical Best at the time. And it was a cross-curricular program that was designed with physical education teachers in mind so that they could find a way to sort of establish themselves as leaders in their school systems. And so
I think ed teachers and coaches make the best leaders, the best administrators. Yeah. What do you think, Gary? I don't know.
Karen, you set him up for that in such a big way. I knew that was coming.
Yeah, I mean, I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it.
There you know? Go. There you go. But
former,
you know,
coach.
They get the short shift. I mean, they get the short shift a lot of the time, right? And people don't give them credit for
it. I remember when I was first teaching and one of the students came down and said, yeah, you know, like the English, I was in the English class and, you know, do you make as much as the English teacher? And I was like, yeah, we make the same amount. And they're like, oh, wow, you got it. But they didn't realize all that went into managing and coaching and the little details.
Yeah.
And Gary's a coach as well.
Okay, so you understand. Yeah. So this program was amazing because it was this cross-curricular program. It came in a box, and the phys ed teacher could now go to the English teacher and say, I need you to teach this concept so that kids will understand about their fitness. And you go to the math teacher and say, can you teach, you know, heart rate calculations and basal metabolic rates and so on and so forth. And it was amazing. And again, the teacher in me emerged because I brought people in from all around the country, trained them, and then they went out back into their states and trained. So they became trainers of trainers who trained, and this program was launched. It still exists now. I think it's called Shape America. And it was it was in direct contrast to what was going on with the President's Physical Fitness Council. We worked with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and, you know, it was a lot of buy-in, and it was this great program. The only problem was that I was working for a nonprofit, and they were making a lot of money, and I was making a little money, and I thought, this is not the formula, you know, that I'm looking for. And if I'm going to create something, then I should be creating it, from my own thoughts and my own drive. And so I left the field, and I, you know, did a couple of things, moved back to New Jersey, got married. And I was suddenly mom to a 5-year-old starting kindergarten. And he was this incredible, he is, it still is, and was this incredible, bright, precocious, engaged person with ability to talk to anyone, could carry on, a conversation with anyone. And he was the kind of kid who, when he got something in his head, he did it. So at about 3 and a half, he put up flags and he took his Power Ranger Jeep Wrangler and taught himself how to parallel park.
Oh, wow.
The kind of thing this kid did. His Matchbox cars, and he did this perpetual motion track throughout the entire first floor of our house, you know, that we Very had to cool. climb over. And so he was creative and energetic. And then he started school. And unfortunately, school just did not speak to him. He had dreams about what this was going to be, and it was nothing he had dreamed of. And year after year, he was more and more disillusioned. He was more and more disengaged, and he more often defined himself as stupid. And it was absolutely heartbreaking.
I know. And Gary, your approach in the classroom really tries to target some of those students. And maybe you could talk a little bit about this, that don't, and we, in our blog, we write about it, the kids that don't, you know school or aren't good at playing the game of school, and how do we spark some passion in them, and how do we get them to love learning again? And because so many kids come into school in kindergarten in the first grade and excited to learn, and then, you know, by the time school, it's about, you know, I just want to do my time and get out to the next stage of my life. And Gary, what are some of the things that, I know you've had some great connections with kids and really been able to tap into some different strengths.
Well, I think that's exactly what it is. It's tapping into their strengths. It's trying to first get rid of this number culture in school, right? That we're chasing the number more than anything else. The important thing is learning and making everything, you know, applicable to their worlds. And everybody brings something to the table. You know, even as an English teacher, you know, I want to teach writing so desperately, but there's so many other ways to communicate. So if a kid can communicate through art, why? That skill of argument writing still comes through. It's just in a different medium. And that's something, you know, that I think now that we're sitting here, you know, doing this virtual kind of thing, we're going to see hopefully a lot more of. And I think that's what we need to do more is, you know, that kind of thing. Or the kids who are the quote unquote, you know, labeled as, you know, jocks in the school, where the school's not, academics not supposed to be the thing. They can demonstrate so much through their love of sport. You know, getting kids to make more things, just finding a way for them to show who they are and demonstrate the skills we want, instead of them jumping through, I'm going to borrow one of Chris's expression, jumping through the hoops just to get that, you know, just to set check off a box.
Yeah.
So, and you think about it.
What's that?
I'm sorry, even phys ed, you know, and you think about traditional phys ed class and what that can look like. And as a former phys ed teacher, you know, I had, and as a student, I loved going to phys ed class. And, you know, I was a sports guy, basketball and the team sports, and I was into it. And I didn't understand the kids that didn't want to play or kind of stood off to the side or didn't get dressed. And then I became a phys ed teacher and, you know, talking to my students and, you know, some kids were afraid of the ball. Some kids didn't like team sports. They didn't like the competition. They didn't like how it made them feel. So, you know, by saying you have to play this sport or you have to have this ball thrown at you or whatever it may be, we're almost turning students off to not only wanting to come to the class and be in school, but to physical activity. Can't we teach them a different lifestyle of way of being healthy that fits their needs? So how do you guys address phys ed in your school, parent?
Yeah, so we actually do, our children are outside a great deal. So for us, phys ed is large games at lunchtime. We don't have a formal phys ed class. So we have large games at lunchtime. There's always teachers running in and playing alongside kids. There are other kids who choose to walk or choose to, various games they'll play. Some of them are climbing, they're climbing trees, they're climbing playhouses, you know, they're doing things like that. They have to be physically active. We also have clubs. So we have a sports and fitness club that meets on Fridays, and we have electives. So they can do sports and fitness basically 3 days a week in addition to their outdoor time. Our middle school students, which we call our outdoor school, they spend 9 hours a week outdoors. So they walk from our building, they walk about two blocks into the woods. It's a 50-acre arboretum, and they roll their classroom with them and all their supplies and materials, and they're out in the woods. And they can walk through the stream, they can climb trees, they can track animals, they do their quiet sit spot writing, they do all their subjects, their science, their global studies, they do it all. And then they walk back and they're in the classroom and it carries on through the rest of their days. So we don't worry as much about phys ed because—
Not as a formal, hey, we got to get our phys ed credit. It's embedded in what you do every day. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit, Karen, about the school? So, you know, what grades are you? Where are you located? How many students do you have?
So we're in Eatontown, New Jersey. We've been open since 2004. We have children from 3 months of age to 18 years of age. So toddler room, preschool room, and then we have mixed age classrooms. So we have grades K through 2 together, 3 through 5, 6 through 8, and 9 through 12. But within that structure, kids can cross over. So for instance, if I have a second grader who is essentially can keep up and do, you know, math at the third grade level, they can go into that classroom for that. When we do clubs, it's broad range age oftentimes. So I could have a 5-year-old and I can have a 15-year-old in my cooking club or in my cooking class. And we also do, we believe in being, you know, we believe in ourselves as a strong community, and to do have a strong community, you have to have community responsibility. And so we have community work on Fridays just for half an hour. And we have a tech group. We have a groundskeeping group, we have a maintenance group, we have living things group. And there again, you can see those mixed ages. So you have young kids all taking care of the plants and the animals, and another group of young kids, you know, hammering in nails and fixing the chairs. And you could have another group of kids who are updating all the iPads and checking to see if there's ink in all the printers. You know, so there's so many opportunities for our children to intermingle, more like a family structure in a sense than a school. But within the direct, within the classrooms, they have home bases. So in those grade levels, and we
have how many sections per grade? Do you have?
So no, just we're a small school. We have about 80 kids, 85 kids. Okay. And so they're together in these grades.
I see.
And then there's always, you know, there's one teacher. Sometimes there's two teachers, and there's an associate or somebody else in the classroom as an adult that helps to support the children and support the teacher.
It sounds incredible. Better approach than, you know, a lot of times in our public schools, it's, you know, based on your age. Okay, now it's time to go to first grade. Mm-hmm. Now it's time to go to second and third. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think about it almost like building a house. Well, okay, we're going to build, you know, we're going to do the foundation, but oh, well, it's not completely done, but that's okay. It's time to go on to do the, you know, to do the drywall now. And then, you know, then what happens? The house falls down, right? Mm-hmm. Because maybe I've met what I needed to do, and I'm exceeding the expectations in math, a little behind in English, and maybe, you know, so we all, there's that developmental piece where kids develop at different ages. And you said it earlier, if I'm not succeeding in one area, or I'm not, you know, checking the boxes, or as Gary pointed out before, jumping through the hoops that I'm supposed to at a given time, now do I start as a student feeling like then, or I don't want to go to school anymore.
Right.
So that's, right. It sounds like you've really, done a great job in addressing that.
Yeah. We don't give standardized tests. We don't give many tests. We don't grade from all the way through eighth grade. There are no grades. We don't give grades. Well, people say, well, how are the kids motivated if they don't get grades? Yeah. How do they know where they are if they don't get grades? Like, really? First of all, I know where they are because I'm with them every day, right? And I'm with them for years. I mean, we're with them for years. So we see their progress. We see the result of their work. We hear them in our classrooms. And as you said, Gary, you know, maybe they didn't express it in written form, but maybe they drew me the most amazing graphic novel to tell me a story, or they wrote a song, or they wrote a play, or, you know, they did an oration, or, I mean, there's so many different ways to know what kids know. But I think what's more important is to know what they want to know. What do they want to know? Why do they want to know it? How does it serve them? And how can I then create the opportunity for them to learn that thing or that concept or that, you know, broad stretch of ideas?
Yeah, what is the skill? What am I passionate about? And now I'm interested in learning those argumentative skills, those communication mm-hmm. skills, because I'm interested in a topic, or I want to do something for my community, or I want to make the world a better place.
Right.
So now it all ties in. When it's not for the points, you know, it becomes about the learning, and now I want to go to school. You know, and I think about how many times, what are the things that I remember from being in school? Well, I remember the science fair and interviewing someone mm-hmm. who had dealt mm-hmm. with anorexia and doing my presentation on that. I remembered, you know, the different concerts, and I remembered the Odyssey of the Mind and the clubs that I was in and the sports that I was in, because I was passionate about those things. I remember, and of course I remember the teachers who I had good relationships with, but I didn't remember the dittos and the worksheets and all the grades and all the tests and all of that stuff. You know, how do we, you know, and I start to see it now in our field that we're starting to shift that mindset a little bit. And, you know, unfortunately, as we're dealing with strange times with COVID going on right now, I'm hopeful that there will be some positive changes in education. Aaron, and then think are some of the positives that could come from this.
Say that again. I'm sorry, you broke up.
I'm sorry. What are some of the positives that you think could come from being changing how we're doing business and educating kids right now when we go back to a sense of?
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting, right? One of the things, I mean, my belief is that the traditional school system as it stands now, which is the way it has stood for 130 years, imagine 130 years, through all the revolutions we've gone through, we have not gone through an education revolution, and we need one desperately. Yeah. So is this the start of that? Maybe. So we've let go of the standardized test, right? We said we're not going to give any standardized tests this year. I think I hear conversation about letting go of grading. Mm-hmm. And if those two things were set aside, would the teachers feel free to do what they are passionate to do? Would they be able to listen to the children and create more child-centered learning? You know, right. Could that happen? Could they set aside, and I don't know, this might sound negative, but could they set aside their ego, right? Which is fueled by, oh, I got these kids through this year. I got these kids, these great grades. I got, you know, here's my result. Could they set aside that and think about what would happen if they saw kids as powerful, resourceful, competent, with intelligence, with curiosity, with wonder, with a willingness to try and try again?
Yeah, I think sometimes, and I think you hit the nail on the head, sometimes as educators, I catch myself doing it sometimes too. We have, you know, we have a vision of what kids are supposed to do or what we think they're supposed to do. And if they don't follow those steps and they don't kind of fill that void of what our picture of it is, then we have a tendency to take it personal and feel like we have to hold them accountable for not learning or being the way that we expect them to be. And if we can start to shift that mindset to saying, if, you know, even through all of this home learning, you know, approach to instruction now, and you know, where is the accountability, and kids are they really going to do it or they're not going to do it? Well, you know, I can give them the information and I can support them. And if they don't do it, or they don't do it the way I want to do it, is it such a terrible thing? Who, you know, is it, to me, is it so terrible? What is, you know, what's your personal problem with that?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You bring up a point that I really think is important to make, which is that at Voyagers, when something doesn't work, a child maybe isn't succeeding or doesn't feel like the child is succeeding, or maybe there's a broken relationship, or who knows, right? But when something doesn't work, our first question is, what could we have done differently? What could we have done differently? How could we have supported that child differently? And what do we do now? Instead of, what's wrong with that child?
What's wrong with them, or what's wrong with their parents, or what's wrong with, you know, there's always, and we can't worry about things we can't worry about. And I think the homeschool connection is very important, and we should tap into parents and we should work with parents as best we can. But at the end of the day, some kids and some parents are incapable of supporting their kids or unwilling to support their kids. We can't use that as an excuse not to educate them. We can't penalize kids more for being at a disadvantage already. If my parent stinks right now, well, I'm going to get penalized. I'm already penalized once because I don't have the support. Now they stink again, and now I'm going to be double penalized by the school. How do we lift them up? How do we give them extra support? How do we give them love? That's what I love about seeing a lot of our teachers are doing, is really giving kids that love, and not holding them responsible for mistakes their parents may have made. Gary, what are you hopeful for that'll change in North Rockland specifically, or in education in general, as we go through all of this?
I think the thing I'm most hopeful for is, yes, the removal of the importance of grades. I think this is really the opportunity to allow kids, and for the people who don't believe kids can be self-directed, this is like the opportunity. All the red tape, as you two have spoken about, has been removed. A lot of the state exams, you know, New York is still waiting on Regents calls and stuff like that. But I think a lot of that red tape is freeing for teachers. I think there's always a fear involved. I don't have this fear, but, you know, a lot of teachers, there's a fear of, you know, whether or not, you know, your evaluation, your bosses will be okay if your kids don't do well on a standardized test. So I think this, once that fear is removed, and I think this current setup, I think teachers might be able to, just because they can't control every single minute of the day, there will be this freeing of, let me try this, let's see what happens. And when they see kids returning some pretty cool stuff, you know, already, you know, just today with my English department, you know, they're sending me, hey, look what this kid sent in, isn't this great, isn't this cool, you know. So I think you're going to see a whole lot of that, and a lot more trust, and I think once we do get back to quote unquote normal, I think the new norm might be more of a trust between teachers, students, teachers, home, and home and teachers. I think a lot of people will see this new way of, you know, we had to let go of the trust. We had to get away from, you know, those of us who were like, you know, day one, we're doing this and the textbook, and the people who have curriculum planned out for the year, you know, they're going to realize that we don't have to do that, and we can tap more into what kids want to be passionate about. So that's my hope, is that now that this red tape has been removed and the tradition has been taken away, that a lot of people kind of embrace a new way.
Yeah, and
maybe that's pie in the sky.
But, no, I like it, Gary. And in all honesty, I think it's forcing us to get down to the essentials of what is really important for kids to learn. And, you know, there's so much, at least in New York State, so much that we're asking teachers to cover in the curriculum. You couldn't do it in 25 years, everything in there. But I think the fact that we're being forced to break down our courses and what we're expecting from the kids to be in really succinct and small chunks of what's really most important, and then we can let their passions guide how they're going to learn those skills and that information through their passion, I think is something that I'm hopeful for.
Yeah, but yeah. And let's look more broadly. Let's say that we can all agree that it's important for children to read, to write, to articulate, and to solve a problem.
Right.
Right. Those are important things, but those things can be learned through anything and everything that we do and they do. And what is even more important is that they can be problem solvers. They can be critical thinkers. They can be innovative. They can collaborate. They can negotiate. They can debate. I could go on and on and on, but in this world, today's world, they're going to go out into the workforce, right? And what is that? We don't even know what that looks like, but we're still driving chemistry and we're driving physics and we're driving, you know, all this mathematics and so on and so forth. But unless we can give them the ability to look at information, analyze it, pull out the important point, figure out what they don't know, do the research and contribute, then we taught them nothing. It doesn't matter if they can get straight A's and go through all their AP classes and, you know, and get into an Ivy League college. It doesn't matter because they're coming out into the world without the ability to think, to work independently, to be nimble and responsive and to find solutions.
Yeah.
Talk to you.
The ideal English class.
Say that again.
That's what you just described, what an English class does. That's what English teachers do. So, you know, and that's what we should be doing, you know, teaching them to read and to be able to pull out information, do the research, communicate it. You know, that you just spoke my language there.
So we're not teaching.
Do the deeper thinking. What does this really mean? You know, we had a class yesterday. I was so entertained by this. So it was a high school class and it was global studies. And the teachers opened the class by saying, did you look at the article that was posted? I'm surprised you guys haven't seen this article. It's really important for you to see this article. We would think like what, you know, and so they opened the article and the article is, it says that the governor is rescinding driving rights to all people under the age of 21. And from this point forward, driving age will be 21. And it looks real, right? It looks real. And they say, well, wait a minute, where'd this come from? The teacher goes, well, you know, it came from Jersey Times, you know? And so the kid's like, wait, I don't know. Is this real? Is this like, what is this? This is, and right away, you have a group of kids that are automatically, it's real. It's real. And that's outrageous. And when is the governor's election? Because we have to vote him out, right? There's another whole group of kids like, this is fake news. This can't be real. How did I not hear about it? Right. And then there's another group of kids that are, that you see the compassion and empathy. Wait a minute, there's some people who are under 21 that drive because they have to get to work, they have to make money, they have to support a family. How are they gonna, you know, how are they gonna, and this, the conversation was so deep and so interesting. And ultimately what the teachers were trying to do, they're studying the suffrage movement and they were trying to help them. And it came immediately because, well, within about 10 minutes, one of the students said, wait a minute, this must have been how women felt in 1910 when the vote was taken away from them.
Mm. And then what a great connection and what an authentic learning experience there, right? And thinking about it, feeling passionate, feeling emotional, feeling, that is great. So you talked a little bit about a lesson now. How are you guys delivering instruction to your kids at your
school? So we have a massive schedule right now. Our teachers are all delivering online live,
so, okay.
We were able to immediately, because we use a lot of, we're pretty tech savvy.
Yeah.
And so we were up and running. We announced a closure on a Wednesday. We closed midday Friday and we were up and running the following Wednesday. And we set time. So every group has a morning meeting. And then they have, you know, this subject classes, So, for instance, like for high school, they'll have a half an hour meeting with global studies. They'll go off to do their work, but the teachers are in office hours. Okay. So from 11 to 12 every day, all my high school teachers are in office hours. So no matter what you might be struggling with, you can go to office hours and you can talk to your teacher and work through. You can share your Google Doc. They're also creating small groups. So if they see that there's similar struggles, they can invite kids to come in for a pocket of time and give them some instruction. Some kids, they ask, stay on office hours and work while you're on office hours because that'll help you focus. They have... the younger classrooms, even the preschoolers and toddlers have a morning meeting, a midday read aloud, and they have an end of day meeting. It's really adorable. And then there's activities. So we have a list of about 40 activities you can do. And it's a form. So we ask the kids to keep the form and submit it at the end of the week. So it has nothing to do necessarily with school, but all the other things you can do. So sure. We have kids making cooking shows, and we have kids showing how to paint. And you know, we've had some really creative things going. We have kids who are reading books and asking us to share it with other classrooms. But it's very lively. It's amazing. We have a tradition in our school. We sing Happy Birthday on the PA system. The preschoolers started and we sing together throughout the school. We're still doing that. So we have all school meetings where we sing Happy Birthday. I do a coffee with Karen for parents every other Tuesday morning. I've done lunch with the parents. We have a weekly evening meeting with the parents. So it's a lot of Zoom. It's a lot of live, but the first questions we're asking is, how are you?
That's so important. And that's what our philosophy has been, Karen, as well, in our whole home learning. And we've taken a little bit of a different approach. We have about 8,200 students. We're about 60% free and reduced lunch. We were not a one-to-one district in terms of devices. So we had a lot of kids that didn't have the devices. So once we closed, I think our last, we changed our professional development day and made it March 13th. It was supposed to be a week later. And that was our last day that we were in with teachers. The kids' last day was the 12th. And our teachers worked in groups to design independent activities that the kids could do independently while we kind of got our stuff together. We have four sites in our district that are open for students and families to pick up lunch and breakfast. We've handed out over 2,000 Chromebooks. Our tech, Ed Mulpey, has been, you know, working tirelessly to get those out. And then we had a virtual PD day yesterday, and now today we've started with new instruction. And we're not synchronous right now, so we're not doing the live right now audio or video and interactions, but we're doing presenting. We're using Google Meets to record different slideshows, or we have our different groups have slide decks that have little audio pieces that you can hit, and there's little instructional videos and then activities that they can do with it. We also have office hours where parents and teachers and students can all communicate and doing that in a variety of different ways from 9:30 to 12:30 every day. But what we found really successful and has been great is we've had different teacher teams creating the lesson. So we have six elementary schools, 3K3 and 3-4-6, that are sister schools. And each school has taken, each grade level team at those schools has taken a subject. So our first grade team at one of our elementary schools does the ELA for the entire district. And they work together. And then the other school does the science and social studies, and the other school does the math. And then we've created a suggested template of a schedule that parents could use. They don't have to follow that. We certainly understand there's flexibility. And then the teachers link that, at, you know, no later than 9 o'clock that morning. And that's kind of how we running. And we're in a good spot. We're certainly going to explore the synchronous teaching. But right now, I'm having second thoughts after the other night. I was watching with my son, who's a freshman at Buffalo, and we're watching YouTube. And apparently there's it's very popular right now, where kids are messing with their college professors with the synchronous teaching. And, you know, you have people like old guys like me who don't know the tech as well as the kids do, and they're messing around with them. So I'm like, oh, maybe we should hold off on that. But it's something that we're certainly exploring. But in every message that we've sent as a district and our teachers have sent, and in opening in the first, you know, paragraph of our plan, is we have kids' emotional health before anything, because they're not going to be able to learn if they are ready emotionally.
We've had teachers mailing letters to kids. We've had teachers do drive-bys and just blow a horn and wave. You know, we've had a lot of different things going on, and it really is about the social emotional piece. You know, I'll give you a little tip. We started out the first day with Google Meets, and it was a nightmare because you don't have nearly the controls that you have when you get on Zoom. When you get on Zoom, you can, you know, you can put somebody out in the waiting room. You can, you know, there's a lot of, because in the beginning there was, you know, everybody wanted to talk, and that was crazy. And some kids were like taking over the screen or sharing their screen. And so we immediately within the first day were like, okay, this isn't going to work for our platform, you know, for what we want to deliver. And we switched over to Zoom, and we have found that to be an awesome platform, really an awesome platform.
That's great. Yeah. And we'll definitely, thank you for that. We'll definitely.
Yeah. But you know, I really think that it's essential now for teachers to ask, why bother? Why bother teaching this thing I'm going to teach, or this whole curriculum I'm going to teach? Why bother? What do I hope to be the outcome? And is that important now in this moment? Because we do have to take into account that these children are sitting home. They have to create their own work environment. They have to have the executive function to organize themselves, right?
Sounds a lot like real life, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you know, under the circumstances of all the stress and anxiety and the potential that the family can't support them, right? So we've done a lot of really great work with the kids, but some of what we're trying to do is to create that whole social emotional piece. And so sometimes you have to set aside something you might want to teach because it's not as important as teaching them how to take care of themselves.
Right.
And we'll worry about it.
Often ask, you know, if I'm in a room full of teachers or parents or whoever it is, and say, you know, what do you want for your child when they're 25 years old or 30 years old, right? And what do you get? Well, you know, if it's me, it's I want them to be happy. I want them to be healthy. I want them to be good people. I want them to be. Do we ever teach those things in our schools? We teach, you know, you better know, you know, what year Columbus discovered America, but you don't know how to regulate your emotions or how to be a good person or do the right thing or serve your community. So, you know, that's kind of that priority piece of it. Karen, what is the best thing you've seen since this whole new way of teaching has happened and new ways to connect with kids, whether it's your school or something you've seen on social media? What's the thing that really warmed your heart in all of this?
I have to say that I'm impressed with, I'm on a call at 7:30 every morning. Created by Dr. Severns, Tracy Severns. And some of the people that have gotten on those calls just really make me feel hopeful about the direction that education can go in. But on a more local level, I have seen my students show enormous progress, independence, expression of interest. Yesterday I watched a video, our STEAM teacher said, take any three materials in your house and create something useful. And one of my students had some foam core boards, some scrap foam core, and just a basket, and turned it into a basket that held books. But when you turned it over, she had a piece you attached, and it would hold a phone or an iPad. So the multi-use piece of equipment that she engineered out of a plastic box and some foam core board. And just the expression and the pleasure that she got in creating it, sharing it. I see little ones with cooking shows. It's so great. So one little kid did a cooking show and that caught on, and now my kids are all doing cooking shows. So
I love that idea. I think that's great. Yeah. You know, it's funny when you talk about Doc Severance's thing in the morning, Rich Allen, who is from Disrupted TV, and he hooked us up, and you know, he does such good work and is such a visionary in the field of education, such good ideas, and really brings people together. But he had texted me and said, hey, can you, if you have some time, check out this, you know, this feed here. And he sent me the information. So, you know, I'm at my computer, and I'm sure you're crazy trying to set everything up too, like I am. And it's like, I'm like, oh boy, my wife's like, oh, you know, dinner. Yeah. On this thing at 7:30, and I go on and nobody's on the thing. And I'm like, what's going on? Do I have the wrong day? And then I realized it was 7:30 a.m. So it was on last night, 7:30 p.m. This morning, I couldn't join, but I hope to get on there soon because and I've heard it's great discussions.
Yeah, it's worth joining. It's a conversation that fuels thought. Right? It fuels thought and it gives you the sense of possibility. I have to say that Voyagers would have never happened except for the fact that we believe that anything is possible. We truly believe anything is possible. So when a child or a teacher or a parent comes to me with an idea, almost never do I say no. I say, you know, wow, why? What will it accomplish? What's the motivation? How would you do it? What do you need to support it? Write me a proposal. Tell me more. And I do think that when I'm on this call in the morning, I hear possibility. And I think if we can get away from, you know, compliance, right? Because ultimately we're driven by compliance. If we can get away from compliance, if we can put the children at the fore and childhood at the fore, right? If you know, you're a parent, so what do you want for your child? That's what you should want for the kids in your class. And then you make it your job to deliver that. And what do we want as a society when those kids leave our doors and go out into the world, people who we will depend on for our economy, for our political position, for our culture and society? Like, what do we want? And I think if we started there and said anything is possible, and children can lead, and children can teach, they can be teachers as well as learners. The possibilities are endless.
Yeah, I often find that, you know, the biggest limit on what kids can do is sometimes the adults and sometimes us, you know, I challenge myself to put kids in a position and also put adults in a position to rise to the occasion. And nine times out of 10, they do. And I think I learned that. We talked about it earlier in phys ed and in coaching. And I was a basketball coach in another life. And, you know, often you had your vision of who was going to play and who wasn't. And then all of a sudden somebody would get hurt or somebody would get in foul trouble and you put a player in and all of a sudden they rise to the occasion and brought things to the table that you never knew that they could. Gary, how about you? What are some positives, or what's something that warms your heart in all of this this craziness that we're dealing with?
I see a lot of people coming together. You know, I can speak to my department. You know, today was the first official day, and I just threw open a meeting and I said, if you guys want to check in with me, and almost everyone did. You know, asking questions, how can I do this better? So I see a whole lot of passion, and every single teacher has expressed, I miss my kids. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when we do go back, there's going to be this rebirth. It's almost like a reset button. You know, for the veteran who may have lost sight of their passion to the person who is the most passionate, there's going to be a reset. That's kind of what is really, I see this rebirth in the spirit of education, which is great. And then I see the kids, you know, you know, I have two in this house and, you know, both of them, you know, my daughter, you know, she's doing so well with the online stuff, but she's like, Dad, I can't wait to see my friends again and like do something. You know, she made a comment the other night at dinner. I haven't seen a kid my age in person in 2.5 weeks, you know, and to me, that's sad, you know. And then, you know, the high schooler who's in this household, you know, she's up this morning early doing work because she was excited to have, you know, be back interacting. And I hear her laughing at a video her teacher sent, you know. And then my fiance is a kindergarten teacher. And, you know, we did go around and deliver some supplies on doorsteps of her kids. And just to see her kids all excited, you know, that here they are and they're sending her videos of, you know, we miss you. And, you know, so I think that's my part, is I think the passion is back because they took it away. The system was taken away. And what we do with that is our ultimate responsibility, right? We're at a key point now. So that, I think that's what gets me most excited, is we'll get through this part of it. It's the next part. What do we do with this, almost with this reset? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the part.
And we've talked about it in North Rockland, Gary and Karen, and I think it's so important for us as a district to come together, but also as a profession to come together. And we are, it's not about I did this and this person didn't do it. It's about we all came together and tapped on each other's strengths and picked each other up on bad days and when we had areas that we weren't so good in. And we came together as the amazing field that we are, the amazing district that we are, the amazing profession that we are, and remembering why we got back into it. So it's not about, well, I'm doing this and she isn't or he isn't. It's about as a group, we did this together and everybody's going to have a part and it's not going to be the same part. That's what really, really excites me. So Karen, we like to go off topic of off of ed piece and I know you running your school and myself and Gary too, and a lot of kind of like triage mode right now of getting everything said and kind of not a lot of time to, you know, a lot of people are not working and such, but we've changed our workflow a little bit and I'm watch TV or binge as some people are starting to do, but you know, I'm a Netflix fan. I know Gary likes, you know, the shows too. Is there anything that you, you know, before all this happened or even during this have had some time to watch? What are some of your favorite shows that you could point to our listeners?
I have to admit that I have been unfortunately in front of a computer from 7:30 in the morning, most times till 9 or 10 at night, at least.
So no Tiger King for you?
No, please, no. I did take time to watch C.J. Walker, which I thought was interesting. Maybe not necessarily the best produced, but great story. And so I'm not familiar with that.
What is that, Karen?
So it's about an African American woman. She was the first female millionaire in our country. She's an African American woman that came out with hair products. American women and fought to get her product produced. You know, there's mixed feelings. Some people say, wow, she was amazing. Some people say, oh, she was brutal. But the story was interesting. So I took time to do that. But otherwise, it's been here in front of the computer. And one of the things that I think that I binge on is other professionals who think in like ways. Mm-hmm. So I want to have those conversations. That's what I'm missing. And also, I think this is a pivot point and I don't want to miss it. I think there are people that are sitting back and waiting for this to be over. Yeah. And then the rest who are just taking the reins and running with it and trying to figure out how to, you know, make hay of it, right? Make something of it. And
who are some of the people that you look up to or admire in the field of education?
Well, so in my interest has been in people like Caroline Pratt from, I'm talking to 1800s, who took her kids out into the city of New York and taught them, you know, with mentorship right there on the harbor and so on and so forth. She was the woman who created standardized blocks. And she founded the City and Country School in Manhattan. She was amazing. She was intuitive and an educator. Followed the thinking of a lot of progressive educators. So John Dewey and John Taylor Gatto and the likes, John Miller in holistic education. And currently the company I keep, as you mentioned, you know, Rich Allen is amazing. He's a real thinker in regard to what education can be. Tracy Severns is fabulous. And there's a few other, there's a superintendent up in Little Falls and there's a superintendent in Hazlitt that they intrigue me. So there's some more, you know, contemporary people.
Great. Yeah. Gary, what about you? We'll start with the Netflix and then people that inspire you.
Okay. Netflix, like everyone else, Tiger King.
Right now. Guilty pleasure, I'll tell you, right?
I'm not through it yet. I'm also off of Netflix. I've been watching a lot of Gordon Ramsay Kitchen Nightmares. So those have been the two. And then of course my standard, and Chris won't be surprised when I say this, The Office. I'm constantly watching. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So
have you got the Brockmire yet? I keep telling you Brockmire.
I watched the first season and then I know season two is sitting there for me and I haven't gotten
season
to
two three now yet. Too. A baseball guy. It's, you know,
I
thought you'd like that. How about people that you look up to in the field?
I mean, I honestly, and this is going to sound, I'm looking up to, you know, everyone that I'm working with right now, my colleagues, you know, they're lifting me up, you know, as much as they're saying I'm doing a lot for them, they're doing infinitely more for me, you know, just their inspiration, you know, you, Chris, and I'm not just saying you've been, you know, you always have a motor, but, you know, this has been like nonstop. I feel like you haven't taken a breath in 2 weeks. Our director of tech, Ed Maltby, I mean,
Ed has been amazing. And Taryn Soto, the two of them, I was meeting with them today. I mean, what heroes.
I mean, exactly that, you know, I've purposely taken a step back from, you know, and Chris and I, we talked about this before, you know, once this all hit, we kind of went into North Rockland mode. I laid off Twitter a lot. I haven't been writing for our site or anything, just because I felt like we had to take care of like us first. And, you know, just watching everyone from the teachers who are so stressed about tech, trying to learn, giving up their time, hopping on a Google Meet with me so I can show them how to do stuff. You know, that's the inspiring stuff. And then, you know, again, I'm engaged to a kindergarten teacher, and just seeing the passion at the elementary level is always inspiring, but even more so now because, you know, they created this awesome product.
I mean, when I see the lessons that they came up with,
yeah,
I mean, engaging, movement, authentic, you know, inspiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's so impressive. I get goosebumps thinking about it. I went on this morning when we first went live, and I'm like, Raina has her SEL one. That's amazing. Look at the first grade, look at the math. Look at the ELA. It really is inspiring certainly makes me proud to be working in not only North Rockland, but in education in general. Karen, you know,
Chris, did you do your Netflix?
I didn't do my Netflix. All right. Yeah. So I'll give you a quick rundown. Netflix. All right. You know, I'm doing the Tiger King. We're through two episodes. It's something I get the boys to watch with me and Rebecca at the same time. So we're doing that.
Right.
You know, I like the documentaries. I definitely like the Earth stuff and the, you know, the different space documentaries and all those things. I certainly enjoy. And you know, I have my guilty pleasures as well. The Brockmeyers and you know, I've been watching. I like The Good Doctor.
Nice.
What are some of the other ones we got into? Grownish, we've been watching that. Makes me feel like I understand what the kids are talking about. that's fun. But like Karen, I haven't had a lot of time to do too much of that. But I want to get, like, you know, some of my goals. I had in my mind that, you know, this is going to happen, and I'm going to have all this time on my hands to I'm going to learn Spanish and I'm going to read some. Much and I've found, at least up until this point, I'm working longer hours than even when we were able to it's definitely interesting trying to figure out that new normal. But you know, Karen, we took a lot of your time and certainly appreciate all that you had to offer. You know, in closing, for our listeners, what advice would you have to people moving forward, just in general, in education? What would you like to see, and what advice would you offer to those people, those parents?
In the immediate, I'd like to see teachers and administrators, all of us, remember that we have to keep it human, right? So, like I said to a group the other day, do me a favor, sometime today, add humor to your work. You know, put a silly question in the middle of the test. Record a silly something you do. Tell a joke. Encourage kids to tell jokes. Let's do something that's more human and kind of, you know, takes away the cloak, right? So I'd like to see that in the immediate. I'd like to see teachers really think about what is important here and maybe slow it down a little bit so that you can get a rhythm with kids that's more than just the information, right? But in the long run, I want to see an education revolution us to a place where we have these productive, empathetic, impassioned people in the world who see themselves as citizens in a broader society. So that's a big, heady thing, but I don't think it's hard to get to.
Karen, that's great to aspire to, and with leaders like you, and the Ed Mulpies and the Tarans and the Ileana Eckerts and all the people, the Crystals that we're working with, I think we can get there as an education field. And Karen, if the offer is still open, I know I'd love to come visit your school once things... Gary, you in for that, Gary?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to come down, for sure.
You went through your staff, which, you know, sounds amazing, but I'd love you to meet my people too, my tech person. You know, I give shout outs to some of these people too, so Jess Saletti and Melanie Patterson and Allison Keelan and Katie Cook and Emma Nunneviller, and I can go on. Like, I have these amazing professionals that make our everyday shine and make my work easier, right? They make my work easier. And, you know, I think the other thing is that they realize, and I imagine, and it sounds like your staff realizes, that you too need to be held up sometimes. You too need that, hey, how are you doing, right? And like you said, your staff was, you opened the door and they came in today, right? And I'm sure they're checking in with how you're doing. And that's important to remember that even our education leaders may look like they've got it all together up front, but, you know, we're working hard. And sometimes it's like, oh, is this working? Am I doing it? Am I doing everything I can do? Did I do it all? And so I think these teams that you talked about, that I'm talking about, they're essential to our work. So I'd like you to come. I'd like you to meet them and see all we do.
I'd love to do that. Yeah. And to all of our for listening today and to listening to the great minds like Karen in education. And I just like to ask everyone, you know, as Karen said earlier, don't look at this time as something to get through and to survive. Mm-hmm. Look at it as an opportunity to make things better, to come out on the other side of this stronger as a profession, as an educator, as an entire society. And I think together we can do that. But until next time, I'm Chris Felicello, known as the admin, and
Gary Armida, known as the teacher.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was great speaking with you today. And as always, thank you, Gary. It's always a pleasure. Thank you. Until next time.
Thank you.